Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. It's a different world. That was the theme music from a TV show that was a cultural phenomenon. This is his 20th anniversary. Brought to our attention by Bobby Marvin Holmes, one of the producers here on the Mark Steiner Show. We've asked him to sit in the studio for this because he had a lot to say about what that was about. And especially since this is penultimate day, he's about to leave the Steiner Show because he's going to pursue graduate school. So it was fitting that on this next last day, he also, since it was his idea to have him in the studio as well, Bobby, good to have you on as a guest.
Thank you for having me, Mark.
And Carla Wills is with us, co-host and producer of the Baltimore Blend here on WEAA. And good to have you here, Carla.
Good to be here, Mark.
Joining us by phone, Eric Deggans, who is author of Race Baiter, How the Media Wields Dangerous Words to Divide the Nation, TV media critic for National Public Radio and the Tampa Bay Times. Eric, welcome to the program. Good to have you with us as well.
Thanks for having me.
And the number is 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages and see what you have to say there. And this is a huge cultural phenomenon on many levels in terms of the jumping off point from the Cosby Show. This is also the same time when money in network television was changing because the laws were passed in the United States Congress and pushed by President Clinton. And this was one of the last times that a show with an all-black cast really made it to the top 10 shows. So let me just go around the room real quick and get your thoughts, folks out there. 410-319-8888. I really want to hear what you think about the impact of this program. And Eric, I'd like to ask you to start first as a TV critic, just what a different world means in the cultural landscape of this nation.
It was a spinoff of the Cosby Show, and it was an attempt to sort of, give Lisa Bonet a showcase.
Right.
She had become something of a breakout character on Cosby, and so it was a way to try and continue the Cosby Show franchise and also maybe showcase somebody who was an up-and-coming star. What strikes me about that time, a different world, I think, always kind of lived in the shadow of Cosby. And even though I think there's a generation that sort of grew up seeing themselves and those characters that were on that show, as far as the TV industry is concerned, I think it always was seen as sort of a lesser child of Cosby and an attempt to kind of stretch his ratings dominance to another a time slot. And a lot of networks tried to develop shows that had all black casts in them around that time. You know, Gregory Hines got a show, and that was one of the more notable ones. But they really tried to figure out how to clone what made Cosby so great. And it was just, it was really difficult, and I don't think anybody really, really pulled it off.
Carla, let me jump to you and talk to your assessment.
I'm interested to hear Eric say that. The thing that you're right in the sense that it didn't get the across-the-board mainstream, success that the Cosby Show did, but it had such an impact in so many other ways, particularly in the African-American community. Shows don't last six seasons just on the strength of Cosby's name alone, I would suggest. But, I think their ratings went especially after the first season, their ratings kind of started to prove that there really was an audience for this show. And I think once the show found its voice, and that is once Debbie Allen came in, the fact that Lisa Bonet only was there for that first season. And then after that, the focus turned to, characters like Dwayne Wayne and Whitney Gilbert and, the rest of the folks who came in that second year. And Debbie Allen bringing that authentic HBCU experience to it. I think that's what started to resonate. I think had it stayed on that same trajectory as that first season, it wouldn't have lasted as long as it did and wouldn't have, left that cultural imprint that it ended up leaving with us all who are familiar. And I think it opened up a door to that HBCU experience to a lot of people who had no idea that was, part of what was going on in our colleges and universities across the country.
And Bobby, you mentioned when we talked about doing this program in the beginning that for your generation, people in their 20s and 30s now, the effect this show had on your consciousness. That was an interesting piece you were talking about.
Yeah, Mark. Imagery is powerful. And when, as a little boy watching young black adults, educated, intelligent adults on television on a weekly basis, that was very impactful and influential to me as a little boy to see people from my my peer group. Coming from the hip hop generation, coming from the hip hop culture, and here we are trying to advance our lives as adults and navigate through the landscape in America. It was definitely something that had a powerful impact on me. I mean, my first introduction to college life, particularly HBCUs, was when I saw School Days, Spike Lee's School Days, and I was introduced to the black experience on college. You had socially conscious students on campus. You had people coming from different economic backgrounds and different perspectives, and these black folks coming together, uniting together beyond just for the cause of higher learning, but also the betterment of their community. So seeing that as a young man, a little boy, you know, it meant everything. And I think it definitely influenced me to move on and come to Morgan State University, where we are now, and pursue an education.
Yeah, I was gonna point out the connection to School Days, too, because School Days, I think, came out right around the second season of the show, mm-hmm. and that's right around when that change you were talking about, where Debbie Allen took over running the show, and Lisa Bonet I had gotten pregnant with Lenny Kravitz's child, mm-hmm.
right.
And so they had decided to de-emphasize her character and have her kind of be off screen because they didn't want to have her be pregnant on the show, and that
right.
and that gave the show a chance to find to focus on different characters. It gave Debbie Allen a chance to sort of take control of the show, and you already had this enthusiasm for shows about historically black colleges that School Days had kind of ignited, and that all kind of came together to help them redirect the course of the show. So I think that helped it a lot. I will also say, though, again, as a guy who just watches the industry, it aired between The Cosby Show and Cheers, which was like the two biggest shows on television at the time.
I mean, it's time slot. So, you're talking about
the
time slot.
Yeah.
It was The Cosby Show and then A Different World and then Cheers. And so I think part of the problem the industry had in looking at the show, you know, white-dominated industry, was that it was sandwiched between two of the biggest shows of the time. So so I think the industry had a different view of the show than black folks did because it never reached the ratings heights of the two shows that it was sandwiched between. But black folks watched it a lot, obviously.
Yeah.
We have a tweet here, but Denzel tweeted in two things. He said that A Different World was pivotal in shaping my consciousness as a black man in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And then tweeted again that a different world mirrored my HBCU experience.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of it raises a bunch of issues here. I mean, I remember in our home also just watching it. I mean, this is when Chelsea and Piper, two young women, both women of color, who starting off the college, and this was, you know, part of what people watched together when people were home and seeing it and seeing what, and it did mirror the life that kids were having. And I think that the question here is, there are a number of things. So here's a show that shifted in some ways. The Cosby Show did it first, and then Rock, and it happened on Rock as well. A different way of looking at the black family and a different kind of humor, different than the old line humor of Sanford and Sons, or different than
Good Times.
Good Times, moving up, right? Good
yeah,
Times.
Yeah.
That some people
mama,
even saw as more of a minstrel show. Some people would argue that you could argue one way or the other. But so these shows were a shift.
Yeah.
And has that shift, we'll come back to the consciousness of how these shows did for what they did for young people, but has that shift stayed?
Well, you know what? I was reading about some statistics, and I think, you know, a lot of people have kind of heard that during the time that A Different World was airing, enrollment at HBCUs rose, I forgot the percentage, you know, a significant percentage, and it has stayed, you know, at those heights. Now, of course, HBCUs, and this is another part of this conversation, are, you know, some say under siege, definitely facing a lot of challenges. But the interest in enrolling in college, seeing that, hey, young people are going to college, that I think that has stayed and is resonated with young people today. And I found it interesting that, you know, of course, Cosby was an advocate of education. You know, he's got his EDD, and education was important to him. And you saw that throughout the Cosby Show. You know, first it was the oldest daughter, Sandra, who went to Princeton. You know, and they were naming colleges. Sandra went to Princeton, and, you know, Theo ended up going to NYU. And, you know, it was like, you know, that education and what that meant. And, of course, he's a doctor. His wife is a lawyer. Education was at the core of this family and their values. And so to send Denise off to college, to an HBCU, Hillman College being the family university and that kind of thing, it was interesting that he decided that he wanted to make that the central focus, to do at HBCU instead of like a Sandra at Princeton. And so I found that to be notable and laudable in that sense, because he clearly, it seemed like he wanted to make that impact. He wanted to send a message to young people that these colleges exist and you can have this great experience, not only just a great experience, but a stellar education. I mean, that was one of the other messages that I think kept being pushed forward when you watched A Different World, that the education was stellar.
Okay,
that's all true, and you know, I hate to be the cynical, you know, showbiz reporter.
That's okay, Eric.
But at that time, you know, people were trying to figure out how to turn a black-centered TV show into business,
right?
Because Cosby was doing so well. Cosby was breaking ratings records, so people were trying to figure out, the TV industry in particular was trying to figure out, you know, how do we clone this? You know, how do we people seem to be watching the show with upwardly mobile black people on it. How do we clone it? And so as much as there may have been other motivations behind A Different World, you know, for the TV industry, it was a chance to basically have a younger version of Cosby. And later, you know, years later, a few years later, we saw Fox adopt that same strategy and give platforms to all of these performers that are now well known in the black community, from, you know, Martin Lawrence and his sitcom to In Living Color, mm-hmm. To Living Single and Queen Latifah and sort of the black version of Friends that actually debuted before Friends. So, you know, this, what's interesting to remember, it's hard for us to remember this at this time, because network TV now is so averse to airing shows that have all black casts in them. But there was a time when it was big business,
yeah,
in the TV industry, and everybody was trying to figure out how to do it.
I'm going to come back to that last point, Eric, you just made, because I think it's a critical one to kind of probe for a bit. And I'm going to go to the phones here. Carla and Arnold, Marilyn, hold on. We're going to come to you as soon as Bobby has his thought, and then we're going to go right to the phones.
I remember also that A Different World was a part of a serious culture shift during that time, because if you think about it, it was a very interesting time for black art and black media. You had Arsenio Hall making his way with his late night show, and he was one of the few, actually probably you could argue the first late night host to introduce hip hop to America. You also had X, another Spike Lee movie, X, the biopic on Malcolm X that came out, and what that did to the generation during that time is gave a sense of pride. You had folks walking around with t-shirts with Malcolm X. You had them with the Malcolm X medallion. You had them with different emblems of the continent of Africa, and you saw red, black, and green. And then Public Enemy definitely pushed that forward with Fight the Power. And all that was happening during the era of A Different World, showing that our youth are raising up, and they're raising up with a different sense of consciousness. They're raising up with their own culture, their own way of life, and their own viewpoints on where they want to go and where their country wants to go. So I thought during that time it was very interesting. We cannot forget the Rodney King riots during that time in 92 and that incident, and really what was happening with black youth trying to define themselves and find their way in the landscape of America.
And what was interesting is that the show A Different World definitely picked up on all those themes. And of course, Cosby, being who he is, he came mostly with a counter kind of point to especially hip hop. That's not his thing. And he basically showed that, you know, okay, these kids, they're in school. Yeah, they may listen to hip hop, but then I don't know if you remember the episode. I'm a Different World crazy geek. I know every single episode. And there was an episode where Dwayne Wayne had a radio show and he played this hip hop song without listening to the lyrics first. And then the university shut him down. And the whole little protest and all of that. And it was really great. But, you know, in the sense that they were showing, OK, the school is a place for expression and you can protest and you can, you know, stand up against the administration. They're showing all these other, you know, sides to it. And so I think his counterpoint to hip hop, you know, versus education versus even his own counter maybe to the executives at NBC when he stuck to saying, look, we're going to show these young college students at an HBCU, which, like Eric says, definitely not necessarily saleable, but it was a point he wanted to make. And, you know, to I guess its point, it was successful to a degree, at least for six seasons.
Let me open the phones here and come back to Eric, 410-319-8888, and Carla in Arnold, Maryland, you're on the air.
Hi, good evening. Good afternoon. How are you?
Very well. Welcome to the show.
I'm really loving this topic as an HBCU grad myself, a Hampton alum, and there were some very, you know, similarities between the different dichotomies and different levels of consciousness and different levels of socioeconomic dynamics that were at play that were aired during the show, and I really appreciated that, you know, and also different geographic regions and how these students of color can come together. And I will also say that in some of our HBCUs, in all of them, but in some specific programs, there's also been an increase of enrollment of our white brothers and sisters, depending upon the school and the program. You know, for example, I know that Morgan has a pretty decent engineering program, and I know that there are white students there. When at the time that I was at Hampton, Hampton is world-renowned for its architecture program, and there were a number of white students there as well. So it's not just exclusively historically black, as in all black, but there are other diversity. For us, it's like reverse diversity. So I will take whatever comment you have to say offline so that you can make room for other callers.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the call, Carla. Eric, do you want to jump in here?
I do think that, again, there was this cultural moment between School Days and A Different World and some other work where HBCUs were cool. And, this movie came out later, but John Singleton's Higher Learning, too.
Mm-hmm.
Movies and TV shows set in the HBCU environment, sort of exploring black culture, it became cool for everybody. And so it makes sense that there would be some white kids who would want to get in on that, and that would also make them want to be a part of the experience. It's just interesting to me, again, that like that moment seems to have passed, and you know, we don't have a lot of mainstream TV shows or movies focused on these subjects anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, Public Enemy became a mainstream artist because of how they were featured in Spike Lee movies. You know, we saw so many performers and artists and trends sort of sparked out of this renaissance. And this was also, you know, when we had the phenomenon of the black-directed indie movie that also became big. So directors like John Singleton and Matty Rich were getting a shot at making films about the black experience. And so, again, you know, like, it's so hard to remember because we now live in a world where it's basically like Tyler Perry making these movies. But, you know, back in the time of A Different World, it was a different time. And we thought, I thought, that it was the beginning of something. And it turns out that maybe it wasn't.
Yeah, that was sad.
So it's a question, let me ask you, Eric, and go around the room real fast on this. Why wasn't it? What has happened in the world of that kind of media in TV where it is that it dissipated and kind of didn't have wasn't the force it could have been?
I think basically the economics of the entertainment industry have changed. Shows that have mostly black casts don't make money on network television, and you know, nobody was, like I said, nobody really was able to figure out how to clone Cosby's success. And in movies now, a big component of movie success is foreign sales. So people complain about superhero movies, and they complain about the fact that you can't get intimate movies made. But the other kind of movies that you can't get made are movies about black people because they don't do well overseas. George Lucas talked about that when he made Red Tails, that even though the movie was relatively successful in the U.S., Europe and Asia could not care less about it. And so that's part of the problem. You know, when 60% of a successful movie's revenue can come from overseas, you don't make movies about topics that you don't think Europe and Asia are interested in. And so, again, it's like we're fighting these stereotypes about us in pop culture. People say it's about hurt feelings, and I always say it's not about that. It's about the fact that we are economically limited because the world has these prejudices about people who have brown skin, and we have to push back against it because it affects everything from whether or not you can have a successful career as a musician or an actor or a director, to what kind of stories get told, to what kind of history we remember.
I also think there's a certain a lesser level of tolerance or leeway or patience from studios, television or movie studios when it comes to black stories. Because I think, you can do a white movie or a white television show and it'd be, marginally successful and whatever. And there's, I feel like there's a little more leeway and a little more time given or whatever. If you're a black, show and you're out the box and you're not, going gangbusters, it's like, oh, it's not working. And I feel like there's a quickness to pull the plug. I mean, I know television now is so very different. Reality TV is taking over and, you can get black people on television, but they're going to be, screaming and acting crazy.
Cheaper to produce, more profits.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Cable TV is the one area where shows about black folks have thrived relatively. And the reason they have thrived is because there's a money-making potential there. I mean, Oprah Winfrey basically rescued her own channel on the backs of black female viewers. They created a bunch of shows that are specifically targeted to black women, and it rescued the channel. They're saying it's going to be profitable sooner than they expected because of shows like A Yonla Fixture Life, Welcome to Sweetie Pies, Oprah's interview specials, the Tyler Perry scripted shows that are on there. All of those shows are targeted to black women. And then channels see that. They see Oprah Winfrey basically save her legacy by focusing on black subjects, and then all of a sudden, everybody wants to be in that business. So I think a lot of it is just copycatting. There hasn't been a successful black-led show on network television for a while, so they're much less patient with shows that have black leads in them, and they're never going to cast a show where it's mostly minority. But if there was a show that was making a lot of money doing that, then they would do it in a second. Because that's their modus operandi. They want to make cash over anything.
We got about a minute left. Closing thought.
Just to go back to the OWN or the Oprah Winfrey model. I think how we remedy what's happened in the past 10 years, and how the culture and media, for black media in particular, has downgraded, is we remedy that with having our own. What Oprah did, she provided a platform. And it's a good program. She provided a platform for other artists. I think of the documentary that she had not too long ago on Dark Girls, where you focus on the colorism within the black community. That's a program I haven't seen anywhere else on television. And I think about the Ryan Coogler movie, Fruitvale Station. Again, black artists taking their projects in their own hands. And that's how we can control the direction where it goes from here, is by taking it in our own hands.
And the final word was had today by Bobby Marvin Holmes, only right, producer of Mark Steiner Show, who's leaving the show to pursue graduate studies in social work. Thank you, Bobby, for your work in the last year, and good to have you on the show here.
Mark, it's been a great ride. Thank you, man.
It's good to have you here. Carla Wills here on WEA, of course, host of the Baltimore Blend.
Thank you, Mark.
Good to have you here. And it was wonderful having Eric Duggins with us, author of Race Baiter, How the Media Wields Dangerous Words to Divide a Nation, and TV and media critic for the National Public Radio and Tampa Bay Times. Eric, great to have you on the show. Please come back.
All right. Thanks for having me.
Pleasure to have you with us. And thank you all for listening today. We're going to get out of here, make way for Michelle Martin, and Tell Me More that is coming up behind us. Reminding you on the way there, the Mark Steiner Show is sponsored in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's National Foreclosure Settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org or at 877-462-7555. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Mark Ennery, and Stephanie Mavronis. Our engineers are Andrea Melton. Our interns are Danielle Dupree, Alexander Rudy, Sinead Hawkins, and Kamani Seldon. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. You can go to our website, steinershow.org, connect to all of our guests and the work that they do. And the things we mentioned on this air and the other connections we have on the air, you can see that now at steinershow.org. You can also listen to it, download and podcast all of our programs on iTunes. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.